Call the Regulated Industries Committee to order. First item of business is welcome everybody back from the interim and everybody in the audience. Also, we have a new committee page. Michael Mullen is our committee page, so for anybody that hasn't met him, he's going to be serving our committee throughout the session this year, so. And Representative Lesh's cousin.
Here.
How did he get in here?
I don't know.
No, we're glad to have Michael with us and Representative Lesh, bring more relatives like that.
I'm so. Working on it. Well, I'm not the Republican guy.
So, with that, Representative Hoppe, you want to move some minutes?
I would love to move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
We'll move minutes of what meeting?
Sorry, I can't read that right.
No problem. Chair, Representative Hoppe wants to move minutes for April 12th, 2005, September 27th, 2005, September 27th, 2005 joint meeting, and January 30th, 2006.
Any corrections or additions to the minutes? Representative Lesh, you're satisfied with them?
Very satisfied, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Members, just a logistical note, we've got some gaming and some liquor bills coming into the committee. We will just send them right down to the division so they can get working on them as they come in, and then whatever would survive or pass out of those divisions would come back up to our committee for final approval. So that's the process. I just wanted to make you aware of that. If you've got a liquor bill, a local liquor bill, or a gaming bill, get it in soon if you haven't already. But we've got a few today, and I guess a few more are coming later this week. So just FYI. The chair will move House File 3090 for consideration and to pass and be sent to the House floor. Members, this is my bill. I'm going to go to the testifying table in just a bit. Representative Hilty will take over the chair. But we will not make a final vote on either bill today on the agenda. Just so you know, the plan would be to bring these bills back up if we're going to take final votes on them on Wednesday, March 15th. March 14th, the gaming division has got that time for their committee meeting. So next Tuesday, if you're not on the gaming division, we won't have a regulated industries committee meeting. So just so you know, the 15th, though, will be a continuation of the two bills today. And amendments, remember, need to be in 24 hours in advance. If you have more amendments, any amendments, they would have to be in next week, Tuesday by 2:30. So with that, I'll pass it over to Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to just present my bill from here. Representative Hilty.
Works for me, Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, members, this bill, House File 3090, is a short bill. There's a few testifiers. To my knowledge, no opponents. But it is an extension of a law that we passed 2 years ago to try for business customers, four lines or more, to allow them to basically be deregulated in the business customer. This would not apply to the residential customer. And 2 years ago in the conference committee, what we agreed to and what was passed was this provision for the Twin Cities, Duluth, and St. Cloud, I believe it was, were the communities, larger communities where there's certainly more businesses, but this is a provision that rural communities, rural providers, rural businesses would like to also have the opportunity to seek and have the competition bring forth new opportunities for their business. And so this would simply just expand the current law that allows it four lines or more to not be under the same regulations, expand that to rural communities and the rest of the state, large and small communities. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'll let the three testifiers go forward and present their reason for this bill, and I believe in about 20 minutes we can move on to the next bill, and we'll just, I haven't heard any opposition, and we can discuss it more next week if there's amendments.
Thank you, Representative Westrom. The first testifier we have on the list is Kevin Boyer. Bayer?
I missed it. No. No, it's on the other bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. In that case, so the first testifier would be Victor Delbrin from Sprint. Victor is here. Mr. Dobris, do you want to give us your name for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Victor Dobris, representing Sprint's local telecom division today. Representative Westrom has explained, we deregulated the pricing of services to four-liner business customers in the metro areas of Duluth and St. Cloud 2 years ago. This bill will benefit Sprint and Frontier by allowing us to offer the same kinds of pricing flexibility to our outstate customers that we're currently able to offer to our metro customers. So we would ask the committee to support the measure. And that concludes my comments. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Dobris, members? Apparently not. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next on the list, we have Carol Werspinski from Integra. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Werspinski, and would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Carol Werspinski, Senior Vice President of Government Affairs for Integra Telecom. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm here today representing a CLEC coalition. That coalition includes XO Communications, TDS Metrocom, McLeod USA, Echelon Telecom, and Integra Telecom. Together, these five companies serve roughly 20% of the customers in the state of Minnesota. And together, these five companies have invested over $500 million in infrastructure in the state of Minnesota. By way of background, I've spent the last 6 years building and growing Minnesota and North Dakota CLEC for Integra Telecom, as well as overseeing operations for our ILEC in Prior Lake. Today, what I'll bring is an operational perspective and a balanced view of the telecom landscape between CLEC and ILEC. House File 3090 is asking for relief from retail rate regulation for incumbent LECs. The CLEC coalition opposes this bill without the addition of two pro-competitive conditions in the form of an amendment. This amendment's two conditions include service quality and competitive enforcement. Under service quality, the Commission's authority to adopt and enforce wholesale service quality standards, including the authority to require payment of self-executing remedies. And under competitive enforcement, the Commission shall have the authority to order compensatory payments in response to active anti-competitive violations. Deregulation makes sense where consumers have a variety of competitive choices for telephone service. It's competition that protects consumers in a deregulated marketplace, giving consumers choices. In a deregulated marketplace with ample competition, companies will compete on price, they'll compete on service, and they'll compete on product differentiation, all benefiting the consumer. CLECs serve primarily small and mid-sized business customers. This is the group historically that has been underserved by the LEC. With talk of lots of competition, this consumer set has only one meaningful alternative to the LEC. I think it's fair to say that in the future, competition will be between traditional telephone service, cable companies, and wireless providers. But today, the small business customer only has one meaningful alternative to the LEC, and that's the CLECs. Businesses aren't using wireless or cable providers to serve their telecom needs. Since CLECs came to the market, pricing for this group has declined, service levels have increased, and new products have been introduced. Integra defines small and mid-sized businesses as companies employing 250 or less employees. In the markets that we serve collectively, this segment is 70% of our economy. And in Minnesota, this is Integra's largest operating state. Without careful consideration of pro-competitive conditions, CLECs can be shut out of the market. The result of this is leaves an important segment, our small and mid-sized business customers, with little choice for telecom services. Ultimately, this consumer set reverts to a lesser quality standard and potentially price increases. Additionally, we believe that there needs to be an effective referee to balance effective competition. The PUC is the state's telecom referee. Two recent court cases have left the PUC without the necessary tools to be an effective referee. These gaps need to be filled to assure consumers continue to have choices in Minnesota. Our amendments are good public policy because they would ensure competitive choice and benefit Minnesota consumers, especially small and mid-sized businesses. I'd urge you to give careful consideration to adding this amendment to HF 3090 in the interest of healthy competition and consumer satisfaction. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wyszynski. Are there questions from members? Representative Westman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was under the impression that there was support by the CLECs for this bill, but I haven't talked to the witness beforehand. So, but the question I have on you talk about the quality service standards. Is there not a remedy in the court systems to handle breaches of contracts, or is the Public Utilities Commission the only place you get remedies?
Having remedies,
Ms. Binsky.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Having remedies through the PUC is much more timely and efficient for companies like ours. We are companies who have been in business for 10 years or less. We don't have financial backing to be in long, dragged-out court cases, and so we need remedy to situations where wholesale quality standards aren't there. We need those quickly, or we will have issues with our customers very fast.
Mr. Chair, doesn't the PUC already have authority to fine and penalize an ILEC that is performing out of bounds on a contract or an agreement that you have with them? You're saying you want them to be able to not only fine them, but take that money and give it to you.
Mr. Chairman.
Doesn't the current law allow that?
Mr. Chairman.
I'm
sorry. Mr. Chairman, the PUC's penalty authority has two critical flaws the way we see it. First, it doesn't compensate those who are harmed by the LEC, by poor quality of service or anti-competitive conduct. And the second is the delay in how the process works today. We aren't going to be able to wait for 2 years for a procedure to end before we have a conclusion to it.
Thank you.
Representative Westrum. Further questions from members?
Thank you.
Next on the list is Scott Baylor from Frontier. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and
thank you.
Proceed.
Good afternoon. My name for the record is Scott Bowler. I'm with Frontier Communications. Frontier is an incumbent local telephone company, and we serve approximately 260,000 customers across Minnesota, both in the metro area and across outstate Minnesota. 2 years ago, the legislature in 2004 recognized that the competitive nature of the telecommunications market, and especially the medium and large business market in the Twin City calling area, Duluth, and St. Cloud. And in recognition of that, you passed Section 237.411, which allows that pricing flexibility for telephone providers serving that medium to large business market in those three areas, metro calling area, Duluth, and St. Cloud. Frontier and other competitors have been able to use that pricing flexibility to quickly respond to customers' needs and to provide telecommunications solutions on a quick and affordable basis. As an example, recently a large customer expanded in Frontier's Wyoming Exchange, part of the metro calling area. There were a number of telecommunications competitors vying to provide that service. Frontier was able to meet the customer's needs, provide an affordable solution, and the pricing flexibility which we were granted to this four-line plus business was a big part of that. Today, in 2006, I can tell you that the competitive market for medium and large business customers is not limited just to the metro area, Duluth, and St. Cloud, but it's statewide. In our territory, as we seek to see it serve the telecommunications needs of medium and large businesses, we see numbers of competitors also wanting to provide that service. And those competitors are having success in a number of areas like Worthington or Cannon Falls, Adrian, and a number of other places. But for the outstate medium and large business customers to derive the full benefit of that competition, all the players, all the competitors need to be on the same footing. As an incumbent telephone company, we're constrained in our pricing ability, and we cannot fully participate in that competitive market. Outstate business customers suffer because we cannot participate on a full and equal footing. It's time now, because of the growth of the competitive market, to allow that pricing flexibility and the full benefits of a competitive market for the outstate business community as well. So I'd urge you to pass this House File 3090. And I'm open for any questions.
Questions from members? Mr. Bowler, I have a question. Your testimony seems to presume that, and just let me see if I have this right, that current regulation constrains you from lowering prices to meet those of competitors that are wish to compete in your service territory. Is that correct?
It constrains us. Our tariffs regulate what we can charge, and it's difficult to meet the particular needs of particular customers.
And Mr. Bowler, if this bill passed, would there still be constraints that would cause you to not raise prices in areas of your service territory where there wasn't any competition?
Well, the main constraint would be the opportunity of competitors to undercut us if we intend to raise prices for large business customers. So that the competitive market would be the primary constraining factor on us.
Well, Mr. Bowler or Representative Westrom, the bill seems to be pretty simple and straightforward. It doesn't seem to discriminate between businesses according to their size. Mm-hmm. So this would apply equally, I assume. Mr. Bowler is talking about medium to large businesses, but wouldn't this apply equally to businesses with, say, 5 employees or 2, as long as it's defined as a business customer?
If they have 5 employees and 5 phone lines, then it would apply to them. But if they have 5 employees and only 2 or 3 phone lines, the barometer, the measurement would be if they have 4 lines or more, which takes at least a decent-sized business to probably need 4 lines to do all their business. Part of the idea is they're not starting out. They're not small businesses. They've obviously got several employees, probably 4 or more, so they're able to shop and watch out and are more conscientious of their phone competition and options than somebody with less lines that might not be as driven to find that deal. So, but four would be the barometer. However many employees they have wouldn't matter. It's how many phone lines they have.
I understand. Thank you, Representative Westrom. Mr. Bowler, the question still remains. There wouldn't really be anything that, other than the potential for a competition, that would keep prices from going up as well as down. Is that correct?
I guess that is true. I mean, there would still be the tariff prices for these services that would serve as a benchmark. We wouldn't change the tariff. The tariff prices would be, things would still be available, all the services just as they are now. This just allows some flexibility for those larger business customers that we could tailor solutions to.
Thank you. Just wanted to get that clear. Are there further questions?
Mr. Chair, just a question for you. By your questioning, would it make you feel more comfortable if there was some assurance that there was competition in an area before it became? I mean, some have talked about that they want assurance that there's at least another bona fide competitor in an area, but this wouldn't require it. But I'm just asking you, is that an issue that you'd want to work or talk about between now and next week?
Well, Representative Westrom, I think that would be something that we ought to think about a little bit here, because if there aren't really any directional constraints here, mm-hmm. It might be a good idea to make sure that there was some potential for competition before we removed pricing restraints. And, if that's not the case, as the bill is currently written, I'd be happy to talk with you further about maybe writing that into the bill.
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to visit with you between now and then.
Great. Any further questions from members? In that case, thank you, Mr. Bowler. And I believe that...
later, Bill.
Oh, all right. Sorry, I should have asked, are there any further testifiers? We don't have any more on the list, but I understand Mr. Knickerbocker would like to address the committee. Mr. Knickerbocker.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Jerry Knickerbocker. I'm here this afternoon on behalf of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, which is a trade group of the local phone companies in the state of Minnesota. We support House File 3090 as drafted and introduced by Representative Westrum. Just a couple of points. The conversation has kind of drifted off in a couple of different directions, but I want to bring you back to the big picture. As previous testifiers have said, this bill is deregulation of business customers with four lines or more, extending that deregulation to parts of the state that don't already have it. And if members want to take a look at the map, these three areas of the state already have this law. Business customers, four lines or more, are deregulated in these areas. This approximates about 64% of the state's population is already covered by this law. And what this bill does is just extend that same sort of deregulation of business customers that has four lines or more to the rest of Minnesota. Just giving you a geographical level playing field, if you want to put it that way. It treats all parts of the state alike. And one other aspect I should mention that has happened since this bill was passed approximately 3 years ago, there have been no complaints. No one's aware of any problems with this law. There have been no complaints filed with the commission. Quest, as part of their A4, which was negotiated separately, it's a contract between two of the regulators and an individual company, has certain businesses and the services that they offer deregulated. And Quest, in addition to being in these three areas, is also in every county seat, the other 87 counties.
Mr. Knickerbocker, I'm not sure we're getting you on the tape here. Maybe you could just take your map back to the desk.
Probably missing on the tape, Mr. Chairman, but I hope it was loud enough for the committee members to hear. So Quest has been granted through an A4 additional business services that they're able to deregulate, and as I was trying to explain geographically, they're in every county seat around the state, plus some additional exchanges. The point is that you've got almost two-thirds of the state deregulated by this law, not been a problem, and you have additional regulation being provided to Quest under their A4 in other geographical areas of the state. Folks, there's not much that this law doesn't affect in one way or provisions of this law doesn't affect in one way or another at the present time. So it seemed like a logical extension of the policy was to extend it to the rest of the state of Minnesota. And that's what this four-line bill does, Chairman. As I said, there have been no problems with the existing statute. No one's brought issues to either the commission or to the attention of telephone companies that these provisions don't work. One of the other things that's interesting, I think, that we should keep in mind, this happened since this bill was even passed. Since this bill was passed, Vonage, for instance, an internet phone company, and there are others out there, have come into the market, a number of markets all around the country. This type of a technology is kind of leapfrogging what we were even thinking about when we were talking about
this bill in competitive areas and deregulate certain geographical areas because there's a concentration of competition, and certain things were kind of talked about in the context of what we knew at the time, you know, when this bill was discussed. The point is that in just a short time, 3 years, there's a whole new technology out there, a different kind of service provider using a different technology to come in and compete for business customers. I mean, it's not a big force yet, but the important thing for all of us to keep in mind is we're looking for tools. Tools for our Minnesota companies to compete one against another or with people coming in from out of state. And you know, the extension of this modest bill is really an attempt to continue that. It levels the playing field geographically for B1, or I should say business, customers with four lines or more. It's really a fair level playing field kind of an approach, and Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for questions. The other issues that have been raised by Ms. Rubinsky, about issues that some of their companies or CLEX may have had with Quest or other providers. I mean, there is a forum for that to be dealt with, and it's the PUC, and if they have some issues with the PUC in terms of structure or how things are done, it sort of sounds like it's a complicated enough issue that perhaps a separate bill ought to be introduced and there ought to be hearings held and discussed on its own merits. I'm not sure in a week, those kind of issues with those parties can be fleshed out. But again, that's separate from, you know, your bill, Mr. Chairman, Chairman Westrum, that just seeks to extend this level playing field geographically to all parts of the state. That's my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Knickerbocker. Are there questions from members? Very well, my understanding, is there anyone further who wishes to testify, apparently? Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Eric Swanson on behalf of Quest, and I will be very brief. I just wanted to respond quickly to the testimony from the representative for the CLEX. The reason I'll be brief is I feel like I'm boxing with a shadow here since I don't know what the amendment may be or what the language is, but I didn't want to leave unrebutted the notion that there are not already in place adequate effective wholesale service quality measures. There are at the federal level, there are in private contracts, there are at the state level. Mr. Chair, Chair Westrum, we think you got it exactly right. This is an issue about money, not about service quality, but once we see the language, we may have more to say.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Swanson. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you describe what a self-executing remedy is?
Mr. Chair, Representative, as the concept has been discussed in the past, at least, it would be a provision whereby if an ILEC such as Quest is found to have violated a service quality standard, there could be essentially a quick down and dirty showing of the violation, and money would automatically move from Quest to our competitor. Rather than, for example, a penalty, which would go to the state general fund.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And who makes that determination?
That Watson. Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I don't know what the proposal is. Presumably, the commission would still need to make a determination, which is the forum where these things are argued today.
Anything further, Representative Thiessen? Question from other members? Anyone else wish to testify? Thank you, Mr. Swanson. That being the case, I understand that we are going to look at this bill on the 15th.
Yep.
At which time the vote will be taken, so we'll be laying this bill over until that time, and I believe that this then sort of terminates my brief tenure as chair of the committee. So, Representative Westrom, if you'd be willing to take the gavel, I'll pass it back to you. Crisis averted, yeah.
Good job, Representative Hilty. Next, we've got Representative Thiessen, who's going to present for Representative Beard, who had to be away today, excused for a bonding tour in his district, scheduled at the same time. Representative Thiessen moves the passage of House File 1319. Wait, we got to pull it up. Representative Thiessen moves to reconsider House File 1319. Moves to reconsider House File 1319. Representative Thiessen, do you want to present? And then what I propose is, once you've told us the bill, we had a little hearing, a brief hearing on it at the end of January, just on the issue. And then we've got a list of proponents and opponents, and we'll divide up the time equally. So those of you in those groups, be thinking about it. We'll have a little time constraint, so you're going to have to be sure we're brief on some of the comments and try to hit the points that haven't been made by somebody else. Representative Thiessen, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And perhaps to start out, we can move to adopt the DE1 amendments to put it in the form that this is a delete all amendment that I think everybody's had a chance to look at.
Oh, okay. So, actually, I'm going to correct the motion. I thought it had already been voted on and hadn't passed, but it actually was just laid on the table. So, Representative Thiessen moves to bring the bill, House File 1319, off the table. Recommends it for passage to the House floor. Representative Thiessen moves the DE1 amendment to get it in the shape that he wishes to have it in. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank
Go
you,
ahead,
Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad that we had the chance to continue this discussion today, because it really is a critical, it raises some very important issues, I think, for the future of the state, and I should say I'm glad that Representative Beard has worked so hard and brought it forward so we can kind of focus our discussion in a productive way going forward, and I'm sorry he wasn't here for a variety of reasons. In the future, I think what's lying behind this bill is the recognition that in the future, you know, our country and our state's not going to be able to compete on wages and on kind of the raw resources that we have in the state, but it's going to be about innovation and productivity. And there was, in your packet, there was a recent Star Tribune article about how the United States, and it's true of Minnesota as well, is kind of falling behind in some of the technological, you know, the pipeline issues related to how we get information transferred between all of us. And I think it was a very eye-opening article and something we really need to pay attention to. And this bill, in some small way, relates to that decision or to that discussion. What this bill is about is trying to look to the future. You know, we don't write on a clean slate in the legislature. And there's a lot of competing interests and people that have made decisions based on previous laws we've had in the past. And, you know, we need to take that into account, but we also need to think about what's going to be best for the future of our constituents here in Minnesota to ensure that the best technology is available both to residents, to our basic constituents, and to businesses as well. And what is the best steps that we can take to ensure that happens? And I think it's important to keep in mind that I don't think that this bill is just about video and having TV and movies being able to come into your home. It's about the technology that bring those videos there, which will also serve a lot of other purposes, internet purposes, telecommunications purposes, beyond just the ability to watch a movie. And I think we should look at this bill and this discussion in that context. So basically the proposal before us, and I think someone else will describe it in more detail, but is an attempt to achieve that end. And it really suggests that what we want to do is to let the market operator, maybe more to the point, to eliminate barriers to investment and innovation. And I think the question before this committee is, are the rules we have regarding cable franchises a barrier to that innovation and that investment in new technology? And that's the decision we have to make on. And there's going to be disputing opinions on that, I imagine. But it'll be important to listen to that with that question, I think, in mind. You know, what I've heard from folks is that investment in some of these new technologies is just not going to occur with the build-out requirements that we currently have. And so this bill is aimed to kind of get at those rules. I've heard, you know, we're in kind of this age of convergence where voice and internet and video and all these things are coming together, and that we have kind of a patchwork of regimes that govern each of the providers that can provide those convergent technologies. And we should look at that, and I think this bill is a step in the direction of perhaps trying to make the patchwork less patchy, to kind of have an even baseline all the way around. And there's also heard concerns about, you know, that there's some protections in place with our current franchise, cable franchise laws that will, you know, perhaps prevent a digital divide, prevent winners and losers from occurring. And that's a serious concern. I'm not convinced, however, that the economics of how these technologies get laid out are going to be driven by whether your neighborhood is rich or poor. I think there's other considerations about density and about the physical nature of how these networks get laid out that are going to drive it perhaps more than these economic decisions. I also think that as we advance our technology, all boats are going to rise. I think that's an important consideration to take into place, but I think it's important that we listen to the different sides on that issue today and make a decision. What's most appealing to me about this bill is that it does leave to the different municipalities the discretion to make the decision about whether the build-out requirement is going to be required in full or not, because I think in these changing times, and it's clearly changing times in terms of technology, our municipalities, our cities, our local governments can really be kind of laboratories that we can experiment about what impacts are these policy decisions going to have, and it'll give us a chance a bit as they make their decisions and go through their decision-making process to see what is the best for our state as a whole, and we can, I think, learn from them. So, you know, I guess the questions, you know, it'll get at some of these questions, will innovation and investment increase if you're allowed to not build out the entire place? Will a digital divide appear? We're going to get some answers to those, which we can't otherwise get, I don't think, hard data on it, unless we allow these municipalities to perhaps make some of these decisions on a local level and experiment, see how this works. So that is how I kind of see this legislation, and at that, I will turn it over to the testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. And basically, where we're at, we've got about 45 minutes left of the committee. So what we've got seven proponents we would like to hear from, and we've had three requests on the opponent's side. We will divide the time up equally, so about 20 minutes on each side. The proponent list, Mr. Knickerbocker, you're on there, but there's a few others, and if you could group some of them and bring them with you. We've got Gene South, Carrie Rice, John Schultz, Kevin Beyer, Ann Higgins, and Jim Smith. If a few of you want to come forward, perhaps, Ann, we could hear from you a little later. I know some of you are from out of town, and we want to be sure to have ample time for those who have driven further. And Jerry, if you want to come up with Carrie and Kevin and a few, why don't we do that? And then no, you've got 20 minutes that we need to live within. So. Members, Kathy reminded me to make sure you keep your materials in your packets for next week's meeting, because we'll continue these bills, so don't throw those. Keep it in your packets. Mr. Knickerbocker, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and the following testifiers will need to do the same. And time is beginning.
All right, Mr. Chairman, could I have a page pass out a handout?
Michael?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Jerry Knickerbocker. I'm here this afternoon on behalf of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, a trade group of local phone companies throughout the state, some wireless companies, and CLEX as well. And the bill that you have before us, you know, is an extension of a hearing that we had last session. It's been talked about. Members are receiving a handout at the present time. And I just call your attention to the cover page, why we need House File 1319, or a few salient points, and then kind of bullet points on what the bill does. And I won't go into those, but members can look at that at their leisure. And then the second page of the handout, you know, has a couple of the issues that have been raised in the previous hearings by other people interested in the bill and the opponents, dealing with lower prices for consumers, what passage of this kind of legislation may mean, why this is good for economic development, why we've got some level playing field issues that we think need to be resolved and addressed in this bill to break competition, and deal with some of the issues that were raised with redlining and competitive build-outs. So members have that as a handout, as a backdrop. For purposes of a few minutes here this afternoon, this bill doesn't mandate anything. It just sets up a circumstance where cities can choose, if they fits their needs of that particular city, that they grant a competitor a franchise for areas served under terms and conditions different than what the incumbent has. The city's 5% franchise fees are protected. The PEG requirements are protected. This bill doesn't affect existing franchises, your cable franchises. It doesn't affect city's authorities. Nothing is taken away. It doesn't affect cable commissioner, cable administrators. They're held harmless in this bill. This is a permissive piece of legislation that has a tool for cities and a way to speed competitive entry into the providing of video services. As a fringe benefit to this particular bill is the economic development aspect of it, or the broadband deployment. One of the good things about this bill for rural Minnesota is that if you have a video competitor that comes into a town, when he or she, I should say, when it provides video on that new platform, with that comes the ability to offer advanced broadband services and deployment of broadband services, which is obviously a key for many of the smaller rural cities. This is a good economic tool. This is a lever that we've not paid enough attention to when we've discussed this bill before. Members should realize that advanced technology makes it possible for telephone companies to provide video over copper wires and cable companies to offer telephone service through cables. If competition works, it'll drive prices closer to cost, meaning lower prices and better services. Hopefully it'll be both. Technology drives down costs unless the technology is held by a monopoly. Cable costs have gone up 3 times the rate of inflation since 1996, 86% in the last 10 years. Where there is competition, it makes a difference. The FCC reports in their report of 2004, the status of filings, that 15 to 41% cable costs per month, lower costs in cities where there was competition. Competition makes a difference. It's been demonstrated and proved where there are indications of the competition with the FCC report. As I said, this bill is good for rural Minnesota and economic development. Broadband deployment and advanced services are the benefit of competition. New entrants provide the platform that can create broadband advanced services. Creating competition in video services is going to stimulate investment, create jobs, and spur economic growth. Cable companies say that, in opposing the bill, that competitors should have to have the same build-out that they have, serve the same service area that they currently have. What cable companies don't tell you is that their current service areas were built in stages, the very approach that they now say should be denied to others. Mr. Chairman, some of the members of the group that's here today to testify will kind of cover some of the questions and or issues that I've raised a little bit here in greater detail. One of the things that telephone companies are concerned about is that video, as cable does today, they have ease of entry into providing voice. There are no rules, there are no regulations. They can pick and choose where they decide to go. But telephone companies trying to provide video are being held to a double standard. And we think the same standard for entry, a double standard, should not exist. It ought to be the same for both cable and voice, depending on where they're offering their services. Reforming this outdated cable law is a way to do that. Neither telephone or television is a monopoly. They all compete with each other, but with satellite and wireless and the internet and who knows what technologies in the future. Consumers are going to decide in the end what package of goods and service and who provides it with the best value. They'll make that choice in the marketplace. But they have to have at least two or more providers to make that choice. And the best way to make sure that happens is to revise our outdated state laws and not put up new barriers to entry. This is a simple bill. It really is. It allows the city to make that one determination, if they so choose, on area served, and adds a new section defining what additional franchises are. This is not a radical bill. It doesn't go anywhere near as far as some of the other bills that are being proposed in other states. But it is a recognition that change is happening. And it's happening in other states as they deal with the cable laws and video issues of video entry. What we have so far in terms of what we've seen as a response to this bill is the cable industry saying that we don't want to recognize change. Technology has leapfrogged regulation, but we don't want you to recognize that. In the state of Minnesota legislature, we want you to do nothing. Well, doing nothing is not the right answer. It allows no competition to occur. It allows the incumbents to basically hide behind a law that was passed in 1973 that's outdated for the times and the technology. Doing nothing is not good for Minnesota. Competition is good for consumers and Minnesotans. Market forces are there, waiting to work to benefit customers. Minnesotans deserve more competition in video services, and House File 1319 is a modest step toward making that happen.
Thank you, Mr. Knickerbocker. We need to, who next?
Ms. Rice, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Rice? Mr. Carrie Rice?
Mrs. Rice. I only allow some people to call me that. I am Carrie Rice, and I'm here today representing Hickory Tech. In addition, I have been working with Mr. Knickerbocker as chair of the MTA subcommittee, which has helped to develop this language. If you're not familiar with Hickory Tech, I used to say that we're the telephone company of Mankato, but as you've heard today, convergence is happening, and Hickory Tech is right there with everybody else. So I now say that we are a telecommunications and broadband services provider. We have been providing telephone service for over 107 years, but we do so much more than that now. We provide, as I said, broadband services to our customers. Over 80% of our residential customers have access to DSL service. We construct and manage complex networks for large customers, and we're constantly looking for new ways to serve our customers. One of the ways that we have developed to serve our customers is the subject of the bill in front of you. I want to tell you a little bit about what this bill means to Hickory Tech, and more importantly, what it would mean to our consumers.
Mrs. Rice,
yes.
Just in the interest of fairness, if you can try to keep it to about 2 minutes, we're going to have to...
I will. I also unilaterally declare that I drove the furthest today,
okay.
So I'm going first. We do provide video programming in 5 communities. We started in 2001 with the city of St. Peter, where we're a competitive phone company. We followed with Wasika in 2004, and last year we added St. Clair, New Richland, and Ellendale. We do provide service in those communities under franchises negotiated with the cities. And so you may be asking yourself, what's the problem? You can go out and get franchises. The problem is we would like to be doing much more. I don't think that 5 communities in 5 years is really going gangbusters. The law as it's currently written just constrains us and does not allow us to have the conversation with the cities that we would like to have about where we offer service. Representative Thiessen is exactly right that we do face a patchwork of regulation. In Northfield, we're a competitive phone company. We do serve everyone in Northfield via our own facilities, looked for Elise from Quest and resold service of Quest. As a competitive phone company, we could declare that we're only going to serve where we have facilities, but if we wanted to provide video over those facilities, we would have to bill to the entire community, which we cannot do at this time. So I will end there. I won't tell you any more about what we do, but only that competition is a great benefit to our customers. Everywhere we've gone, we've seen networks improved and prices lowered, and I urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Kevin Byer, why don't we have you come up?
Thank you.
Oh, Kevin, a couple minutes. Tell us about your situation, probably similar to what Mrs. Rice just said.
Chair Westrum, committee members, I'm Kevin Byer. I'm general manager of Federated Telephone Cooperative, headquartered out of Chicago, Minnesota, out in West Central Park. We have 3,000 access lines in our ILEC and 1,500 access lines in our CLEC. And one of the issues for us is that we build a fiber-to-the-home network, and that is what we've done since 2000 and continue to do. But as we build that network, it doesn't necessarily cover community by community. It covers geographic areas that make sense with the construction of our fiber facilities. And we don't always have the luxury of saying that we're going to cover a certain area within a franchise authority. It's a network authority or network that's put together that allows us to serve this area. And we had gone into a community as a CLEC endeavor, and we were lucky enough that the franchise agreement allowed us to complete that bill within the time frame that our network could support. But the cost of building that network was extremely high. And this broadband network that we use as an all-fiber network needs all three revenue streams in order for us to be able to pay back for that network that we constructed. When we went into that community, we saw that the cable ILEC competitor lowered their rates substantially when we moved in, and I think that would happen in many of the communities that we would be able to go into. But at this time, with the current law that's in place, it is difficult for us to talk with that community and say, well, here's where our network's going. We'd like to be able to provide video where our network is built. And they're saying to us, well, we have this rule that we can't give you any less burdensome than what we would someone else, and you're going to have to cover the whole thing before we'll allow you to get the revenue stream from video. And that's what we would like to see that change, so we could communicate with those cities and talk about what's good for them and what we're going to be able to do for them and be able to serve those that we can serve.
Thank you. Next.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Gene South. I'm the CEO, General Manager of Lakedale Communications. Good afternoon to you and the rest of the members of this committee. I'm here to support House File 1319, known as the Cable Entry Bill, on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Rural Telecommunications and the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. Our companies have experienced in the field with multiple cities a barrier into the video market. These cities are requiring to build out to the full area, the cities stating that they must meet the letter of the law, a law that is 33 years old that needs to be modernized and to be caught up with everyday lives. Keep in mind that requiring us, the telcos, to build out in a short time frame, 5 to 7 years, in some cases 3 years, when the existing provider took over 20 years to build out that infrastructure. Let me highlight that many of the telcos that's in this room at this hearing today builds out their infrastructure beyond the city limits. Wherever they place electronic nodes on their infrastructure, they can roll out that of voice, video, and data simultaneously. So we do not confine our services just to the city limits. I'll give you two very brief examples of the difficulties that we have occurred in the field. Our company applied to enter into the video world in two cities. In making those applications, we were notified immediately the two cities was part of a 13-city franchise consortium. They said, Mr. South, for you to come into this area, you must build out to all 13 cities and provide service immediately to that of 60,000 subscribers. We are small. We do not have the deep pockets to do that. Another city says you got to build out to the full city. within 7 years, which would have cost an additional $7.6 million, and do it within that 7 years when the existing divider took 25 years to get there. I would like to briefly touch on broadband. From the governor down to everyone in this room wants broadband access to every subscriber in Minnesota. We, the small rural telcos, have that same desire. Many of our telcos have 100% availability to DSL to all of their subscribers today. This bill will encourage further investment of broadband and the fast access to Internet, which is essential to economic development. We ask you to support this bill and vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we've got about 5-6 minutes left. So,
okay. I'm John Schultz from FTTH Communications. Thank you,
John.
Thank you, Chairman Westrum, members of the committee. I want to talk to you about our situation. I'm not owned by a telephone company. I'm not owned by a cable company, so I don't get cards from any of these people in the room today. But just want to tell you about our situation is we provide fiber-to-the-home services to residential communities around the Minneapolis metro. Our owners aren't the incumbents. Our owners are residential land developers who have spent millions of dollars developing their properties in the state of Minnesota. We come in and provide differentiating service within our communities. Where we compete today on a basis, we compete, our customers see three things. They can get service from us, voice, feed, and data, from the incumbent cable company, voice and data, cable, maybe voice, and also from the incumbent telephone company who provides all three services, usually in a relationship with a dish provider or on their own. So we're seeing competition today. And we're seeing for small companies like this who are being innovative in the space, we've been doing fiber to the home about as long as Mr. Byers has over at Federated. We see this as being not just an issue regarding competition and fairness and so on and so forth and all the things that are important, or rights away, which is really, I think, when I get down to it, the ability for the city to control the rights away is important. None of that goes away. What it is, it's the ability for companies like us that are small and innovative. We serve 800 customers a day with 4 employees. I was setting satellite dishes today, so it's not just the big companies that are trying to do this. It's small companies like ourselves. What we would like is the opportunity to not have the burden and to prove our business plans and to serve a niche in the metro area that we can serve and also compete with the with incumbent providers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Go ahead next.
Good afternoon, Representative Weston and members of the committee. My name is Jim Smith. I'm a member of the Lake Minnetonka Cable Commission and a citizen representative of the City of Independence, where I just completed a third and final term as a member of the City Council. The LMCC is a joint powers entity located a local franchising authority for 17 cities along the shores of Minnetonka. In 2005, I served as president of the Association of Metropolitan Communities, member of the board of directors for the League of Cities, and was on the policy development committee that helped develop this policy for the League. House Bill 1319 has somewhat of a lengthy journey since it was first introduced in 2004. As has often happened, plans go astray, time ran out, so the LMC member cities appreciate the renewed interest in the House Regulated Industries Committee that has indicated in this modest proposal. House Bill 1319 proposed changes in Chapter 238, which governs the cable franchising in Minnesota to promote competition and in the delivery of video program in public, educational, and governmental channels for the use by communities, government, educational institutions, and the local level. You will hear or have heard Representative Thiessen in more extensive detail about the specifics of chief importance to the cities and their commissions. House Bill 1319 upholds and supports, enlarges the role of authority of local elected officials to exercise a broader discretion in negotiating the terms and conditions for awarding the initial additional franchises. It's worth noting the perspective of the cities brings the development to this legislation. League policy urges the legislature to recognize the needs for change in the state cable franchising policy, to allow cities, more than traditional cable commissions, to increase options and flexibility in negotiating the terms and conditions of competitive entry and upholding local authority necessary to require new providers to meet community needs. The provisions of House Bill 1319 represent a solid basis for connecting franchise negotiations with new entrants that permit local franchising authorities to reach agreement on areas of the community or regions to be served that may be different from that of the area served by the incumbent franchise operator. House Bill 1319 makes it possible for local officials to deliberate about the terms of applications for competitive franchises to determine whether and to what extent to allow a new entrant to serve a limited area in the community or a region, or to negotiate the terms of a build-out that the new competitive service offering. The authors, the lead-all amendment in House Bill 1319, encompass several changes to the bill. Among those that are most important is the local franchise.
Let me get a wrap up fairly soon. 30 seconds.
I'll be through in just a second, sir.
Okay.
A requirement that incumbent franchises allow a competitor to interconnect with all public and educational, governmental, public, local organizing programs, local authority to determine and provide notices and all terms and conditions of the interconnection. Sir, there's three or four things that we need. We need competition to hold down prices. We need inducement to offer broadband services and video to all citizens, and we need to make sure that the local officials have some control to franchise and operate and a means to provide the government and community services. Thank you.
Thank you. Ann Higgins is the last one we have on our list. Ann, of the proponents, if you can make a brief, we're just over 20 minutes now. So,
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ann Higgins from the League of Minnesota Cities. Jim presented the information that we provided to you from the League of Cities, and his statement stands for what our position is. Thank you very much.
You're in favor of this bill?
Yes, we have.
As the League of Cities?
On the bill for some time. Thank you.
You've worked, okay.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, briefly, there is an amendment that will be offered next week that takes care of some of the League's concerns with this bill, just so everybody is aware of
that. And that's in our packet, so we'll, it's not. It will be distributed. Okay. All right. With that, thank you all. We will hear from the opponents. We will, Mike Martin, Dave Sikora, and Kim Roden are the three that we've had contact us. However you want to divide up your 21 and a half minutes, time will be starting soon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm Mike Martin.
Welcome to the committee, Mr.
Executive,
Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. I understand there's others that want to speak in addition to our panel, so we'll
move to other
opponents.
In opposition, okay.
Yes.
If there is, if you could, while you're speaking, if they could just send their name up to the front of the table here, that'd be great. And you probably know them, so, who they are, so you guys can divide that however you want. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. As you know, the Minnesota Cable Association is opposed to this measure to House File 1319. We believe that this bill stands for unfair competition. The bill undermines a long-established policy of a level playing field in the delivery of cable services, and it creates an uneven environment and provides a legislative benefit to one competitor over another. Almost 20% of the homes in Minnesota do not purchase any multi-channel service at all. On top of that, satellite TV companies serve 25% of the homes in Minnesota. And in addition to that, there are many communities which have franchised competitive wireline competitors. The FCC has affirmed that the market for cable services is competitive. Secondly, we believe that House File 1319 means redlining and cherry-picking. House File 1319 would violate the long-established policy in Minnesota against this practice. New competitors could come in and only build in those affluent neighborhoods where they feel they will get the best return. Telephone companies have repeatedly stated that they intend to market high-value customers, and they do not intend to serve low-value customers, which we read as low-income or high-cost areas. The bill would allow a city to grant a franchise of more favorable terms and conditions in the award of a franchise to one competitor over another. Cable television companies have never had the benefits of guaranteed earnings. They've never had support from universal service funds or other subsidy mechanisms. Minnesota's law stands and has stood for many years for fair competition and a level playing field, which we support. There's many problems with this bill, and the bill needs to be part of a more comprehensive policy that addresses telecommunications. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll turn it over to Kim Roden.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead. Please identify yourself for the record.
I will. Thank you. My name is Kim Roden, and I'm Vice President of Public Affairs for Time Warner Cable of Minnesota. I also have had the privilege of serving as just the immediate past president of the Minnesota Cable Association, which is a trade association representing cable companies in Minnesota. This afternoon, I'd like to very briefly outline our specific concerns regarding House File 1319. We are opposed to this bill. I want to specifically address the local public policy issue that we think is so important and we would like the members to consider. There are in Minnesota today nearly 1 million subscribers to traditional cable television systems. That's just over 50% of the households in Minnesota with televisions. Thousands of other homes receive multi-channel video services from satellite companies such as Dish Network and DirecTV. In fact, as Mike mentioned, it's estimated that 25% of the homes take a satellite service, and another 20% of the homes in Minnesota are content to use free over-the-air broadcast television every month. The FCC report on video competition that was just issued this week shows that the second and third largest cable companies in the country are actually the two satellite companies who have no local or state regulation at all. In fact, I'm going to say that one more time because it's a little bit confusing when you first hear it. The FCC report on video competition issued this week shows that the second and third largest cable companies are the two satellite companies who have no local or state regulation. In Minnesota, there are about 40 communities that have a second wireline cable television provider. In other words, those communities already have two wireline services, broadcast service, and two satellite services already available to them. This, I'm sure you will agree, adds up to a very competitive marketplace. Our customers every month make a decision about whether they want to continue with Time Warner, whether they want to sign up for an attractive satellite offer, or simply get by with a free television antenna that they put up and get the broadcast channels. They also can have the VCR and the DVD player. So this is how we see the marketplace today. I want to also point out that the FCC has declared that the video marketplace in both 2005 and in 2006 is effective competition. They have said that we have effective competition in this marketplace. In Minnesota, the state law has always recognized the non-exclusive nature of cable franchises since the law was written. Minnesota has been very specific in establishing a policy and a minimum requirement in the award of cable franchises. No cable franchise is exclusive. This is a pro-competition policy. A city may grant additional franchises, but the terms of those franchises must be the same with regard to three critical elements. Number one, the area served. Number two, the public educational and governmental access requirements, known as PEG channels. And number three, the amount of the franchise fee. This has been the law and the policy, and the companies in those communities with two wireline franchises have followed that law. This includes companies like Hiawatha Broadband in Winona. It also includes New Ulm Telephone that competes with our New Ulm system and also with the MediaCom system in Springfield, Minnesota. And there are many others, but too numerous to list. But in each of these situations, the competitor was franchised by the city in accordance with the current law. There was no barrier to entry. The construction schedule, the PEG access obligations, and the other conditions were worked out fairly without any litigation and without coming down here to you asking you for a special favor. The cities are very specific in their requirements of additional franchisees, as they are with us. They expect the entire community to be served. They expect a full complement of PEG services, and they want the maximum franchise fee permitted by law. The law, as it is written, does provide for a level playing field. To adopt House File 1319 the way it is currently written will result in an unlevel playing field or unfair competition. Basically, one competitor gets a better deal. One can enter a market with less of an investment, can go to the most affluent neighborhoods, and avoid those that are less attractive. In other words, only a few parts of a community will get competition increased. The affluent neighborhood will be cherry-picked, and those deemed unworthy will be redlined out of the picture. We don't believe that's a good idea. House File 1319 allows the city to grant more favorable terms and conditions in the award of franchises to one competitor over another. This is very different from telephone regulation, which this committee also reviews, in which the Minnesota PUC implements policies consistently across the state among all competitors. This is also a departure from Minnesota's long-standing policy of fairness. House File 1319 has many problems that point out the need for a more comprehensive review of telecommunications and not adopting a policy prepared by one company or industry to the disadvantage of another. The U.S. Congress has held more than a dozen hearings on the changing role of telecommunications and on the appropriate level of regulatory oversight. The announcement of the merger this week between Bell South and the new AT&T only confirms the need to proceed cautiously. That's how provisions of this nature should be treated. In summary, I believe that this proposal is inherently unfair. It creates advantages for one industry over another and will result in an uneven distribution of competition in an already competitive market. Please vote to defeat House File 1319. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Who do you want next?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have two more people that have signed up. Are you aware of them?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
I will be brief in my comments, Mr. Chair. I am David Sikora, and I'm a Vice President of Government Affairs for Charter Communications Great Lakes Division. Our company provides service in a number of communities across Minnesota, and we are opposed to House File 1319 because it's not a deregulatory bill and it's not a pro-competitive bill. Rather, it is specifically designed to create unfair advantages that would favor one competitor over another. The biggest supporters of House File 1319 are the incumbent phone monopolies, who have argued that this bill is fair because it treats existing cable companies like the incumbent phone monopolies. I'll take a moment to explain why that argument is wrong. In the past, I worked for one of the phone companies in Minnesota doing their state regulatory work, and I'm very familiar with the regulatory obligations of the incumbent phone monopolies, such as the members of the MTA. What they want you to overlook are the incredible privileges associated with being a phone monopoly, the benefits which they still enjoy today and which cable operators have never had. As you consider this bill, please do not make the mistake of confusing a cable company with an incumbent phone monopoly. Here are some of the fundamental differences between them. Unlike the incumbent phone monopolies, cable companies in Minnesota have never enjoyed an exclusive franchise area. If you look at page 2 of House File 1319 up at the top, line 2.1, there's a provision requiring that cable franchises be non-exclusive. That's been in Minnesota law since the beginning of cable regulation. It took until 1996 before a similar kind of obligation was put into phone regulatory law. So cable law has long been ahead of phone law in creating a competitive environment. Unlike the incumbent phone monopolies, cable companies have never been subsidized with free use of the public rights of way. Unlike the phone monopolies, the state of Minnesota has never guaranteed a cable company a recovery of the capital that we've invested in this state, much less a return on those investments, which has been guaranteed to the phone monopolies. Unlike the incumbent phone monopolies, cable companies have no universal service fund to support our operations. And unlike the incumbent phone monopolies, cable companies have no cross-subsidy pricing mechanisms like access service charges, which the state PUC has built into their pricing mechanisms. Incumbent phone monopolies have enjoyed all of these enormous benefits for the better part of a century. These are the privileges associated with being a regulated monopoly. Those are the privileges they'd rather you overlook in making this comparison. Cable companies are very different from the phone monopolies who are supporting the bill. Building a cable operation has been a risky venture since the very beginning. Every customer we have has made a choice between putting up an antenna to get their TV or buying our service. Ms. Roden has discussed the competitive environment in Minnesota, and every service that we operate has a strong, every service that we provide has a strong competitor for it. Every dollar that we've invested in building our business has been risk capital. The same cannot be said for the phone monopolies. That's not to say that we have not been regulated. Because cable companies own network facilities that use the public rights of way, we've operated under a regulatory structure that requires obtaining a franchise from the local municipality. The obligations in these franchises have, in many cases, been a significant burden, and the benefit that we've obtained from shouldering these burdens has simply been the right to put our facilities in the rights of way and the promise that everybody else who wants to provide a video service would have the same situation as we have. We've never had the tremendous privileges associated with the phone monopolies. We've not had a guarantee of an exclusive right to provide TV service, or that we'd be able to make enough money to earn back the capital we've invested in this state or the other benefits that they've enjoyed. You've heard discussion about the area served requirements. Our franchises have had build-out requirements. They've applied since the time when our systems were first built, and we were given the time schedule to build out to the extent of that community. That same build-out schedule is in the existing law. Again, if you look at House File 1319, the existing law on page 3, lines 3.6 to 3.13, have a very fair build-out schedule that we've met and that the phone companies would be looking at meeting as well. Additional obligations were added over the years as we renewed franchises. A number of communities asked for upgrades and improvements in the network systems, and phone companies have met those. And we continue to meet those requirements as we build out to new neighborhoods that are constructed every year. We constructed over 200 miles of plant last year to meet these requirements. The point I want to emphasize that this is exactly what the proponents of the bill don't want to do. They're asking you to give them the privilege to pick and choose to serve the high-end neighborhoods and avoid the neighborhoods that don't fit their business plan. The public statements that they've made and the actions of a variety of phone companies make it clear that that's exactly what they intend to do. This is not a situation where all boats will rise with the tide. It's a situation of you need to be in the right community or your boat is going nowhere. At the same time, they want to be relieved of this area served requirement. These obligations would continue for the cable companies that have accepted the current franchises. I can only assume that the phone monopolies have an incorrect assumption that cable companies have some form of universal service fund to support operations or an earning guarantees such as they have, but that is simply not the case. If the economics of our business don't work anymore, our only real option is to increase prices in other areas or to shut down the business in that town. Minnesota law today has a level playing field provision. The bill before you can only be characterized as an effort to create an unlevel playing field. And the ones who would benefit are the phone monopolies who have already enjoyed the decades of privileged status in this state. Mr. Knickerbocker said earlier that he supports a level playing field provision in the other bill that was before you today. We believe he should accept the same level playing field in the video market. This bill is inconsistent with fundamental notions of fairness that Minnesota has traditionally applied, and I urge you to vote against this bill and retain the level playing field provisions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We've got the other two, Greg Moore and Tim.
How much time is left?
About 5 minutes, four to five minutes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Greg Moore. I'm the executive director of the Northwest Suburbs Cable Commission. With me is Tim Finnerty. He's the executive director of the Ramsey Washington County Cable Commission. The Northwest Suburbs Cable Commission is a municipal joint powers commission located in the northwest suburbs of Hennepin County. It includes the cities of Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, Crystal, Golden Valley, Maple Grove, New Hope, Osseo, Plymouth, and Robbinsdale. The area serves about 75,000 subscribers, which would make it slightly smaller than the city of Minneapolis and slightly larger than the St. Paul, and just in terms of comparison. The Northwest Suburbs Cable Commission is very pro-competition. In 2000, we granted not one but two competitive franchises. Unfortunately, the economic downturn made it impossible for those franchisees to accept the agreement and move forward. We're very much pro-competition, however, we're opposed to this bill because this bill will leave people out. The new competitor will be able to serve just the areas they want to serve, and not only will some folks not end up with a competitor, but as time goes on, they will be left further and further behind as services and technology continue to develop. We believe any state policy should include everybody and that no one should be left out as a matter of state policy. We also oppose this bill because it destroys the concept of a level playing field. That concept requires that every competitor has the same burdens and the same obligations. This bill essentially rewards the new competitor who invests in just a portion of the community and penalizes the provider who has invested in the entire community. And it also threatens the other two provisions of the level playing field, and that is community television and franchise fees. And finally, we oppose it because we believe it diminishes local control by restricting cities from imposing PEG or other requirements, which are in excess of the current franchisee. Authority granted us by the federal government so that we can meet needs at the time the franchise is granted and not based on a needs assessment that may be 10 years old. Just a quick history of our organization that relates to the issue of competition. 1981, the franchise was first granted. The requirement was everybody would get service. Nobody was left out. Everybody living in a developed area was served. Skipping very quickly ahead to 1996, a major telecom act was passed. And one of the major provisions of that telecom act is it allowed the cable industry and the telephone business and the telephone companies into the cable business to create greater competition. In our area in 1997, we renewed the cable franchise, and the cable operator built fiber optic cable into all the neighborhoods, not just into certain neighborhoods. No one was left out. In 1999, the cable company entered the internet business. Again, all areas were included, and this year, all areas will be included in their phone service. No breaks were provided by local government or state government. They essentially went ahead with the rules that were in place at the time. And unlike DSL, to this day, high-speed internet is available to everyone in our communities. In the year 2000...
We're down to about a minute now.
Okay.
So just however you want to allocate time, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm basically going to agree with him anyway. So
okay.
He can use my time.
Nice to know someone. We're asked, I guess, why do we care if we can say no? And the reason we care is, first, we believe it's poor public policy. First, we believe what some cities do is going to affect us and is going to affect our cities. Thirdly, removing the area served is almost an endorsement by the legislature that cities go ahead and do this. Cities pay a great deal of attention to what the legislature does. And by moving away from the standard that the whole area is served, it is going to be argued for certain by new competitors that this is the legislative intent to essentially serve certain areas and leave people out. Cities are going to be cognizant of that. And as we get approached with this, we're going to be very mindful of what that intent may be. But the real problem is going to occur is after some cities go ahead and do this, a few years down the line, there are going to be people living on the wrong side of the street. They're not going to have a competitor. They're not going to have a choice, and they're going to wonder why. And that, this issue will find its way back to the legislature. And we are extremely fearful at that time that you're not going to think cities did a very good job, that many people would be left out. And again, we just think that that is very poor public policy. So I will wrap it up there, and I don't know if Tim wants to add anything, and be happy to take any questions.
Mr. Finnerty, any quick comments?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tim Finnerty. I am executive director for Ramsey-Washington Cable Commission, which is a joint cable commission serving 12 municipalities in the Northeast metro area. Ramsey-Washington Cable Commission is opposed to this bill for all of the reasons that that Greg just described. Level playing field among competitors matters in cable. That's defined by the terms and conditions of a franchise, and service area and build-out provisions of a franchise are, you know, the most costly. Deleting it from level playing field implicates tipping the level playing field in a way that it's an experiment that I'm not sure folks would want to fix. Find very easy to fix later on down the road. That's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I think there's actually one more person wants to, Quest would like to briefly testify based on some comments that were made during the recent testimony.
Okay. We'll make it brief. And then this bill will be laid over until next week.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wednesday. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. I'm going to ask...
Identify yourself for the record.
This is my name is Andy Schreiner. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Quest. I have with me today Mr. Jim Campbell, who is doing some work with us on the video issue, and we just felt that some of the issues that have been raised by previous witnesses need to be addressed, and we'd like to take that opportunity to do this now.
We have to be real brief on it, so...
Be very brief, Mr. Chairman.
Please do that.
Thank you. Again, my name is Jim Campbell, here representing Quest. Very briefly, where Quest is on this is we feel that there should be no mandated bill requirements for any second entrance into the video business. Where the bill sits now is we would have to negotiate on a city-by-city basis whether those build requirements would be in the franchise agreements or not. And if we got half the cities in an area to say, yes, there are builds, and we couldn't agree to that, and half to say no, it would lead to spotty deployment. So that's where our position is. We certainly are for competition, and you've heard all the benefits of competition. I won't repeat those. I would like to address a few of the points the opponents made. Ironically, their testimony sounded a lot like U.S. West testimony in 1996, when many of those companies were trying to get into the video business, and we were on the other side of these arguments crying that there was going to be redlining, cherry picking, and they were only going to serve the most affluent areas. I'd like to point out we lost those arguments in 96 on all 50 states, I think, on the federal level and, if I'm not mistaken, Puerto Rico. Another thing that I'd like to point out that the opponent said is that we are their capital is at risk and ours is not. We are under an A4. Our capital and any capital we deploy to deploy our advanced telecommunication systems is as much at risk as theirs. The opponents also pointed out that we were under a guaranteed rate of return. That is true, that for some time the telephone companies were. I would point out there that our residential service was provided at below cost. And if anyone's seen how much the cable rates increase on an annual basis, I wouldn't be worried too much about their revenue. And finally, they pointed out that the 33-year-old law requires non-exclusive franchising. That's absolutely correct. And they claim that because of that provision that competition will flourish in Minnesota. Yet I find it ironic that after 33 years, if it were that competitive and it were easy to get into the business, that only 30 communities out of, I think, 87 counties and I'm sure hundreds of cities have a wireline competitor. And the studies show and the reports show that the only way that residents are going to gain benefits is if there's a second wireline competitor. So in conclusion, that's why we would support legislation that would eliminate mandatory build-outs and allow the market to deploy competitive video services as opposed to regulation. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Thiessen, any final comments? Otherwise...
Only a brief one, Mr. Chair, and that's there's a lot of kind of facts on both sides. I would just encourage everybody to look very closely at, you know, some of the representations that have been made on both sides to make sure that they're actually supported by facts and not just, you know, speculation and concerns, because I think this is a very difficult issue, and I don't know all the answers, but I think we should at least demand that much. So thank you.
Good comments. Representative Zellers?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think since we're going to revisit this again, a copy of the FCC report on competition that was referenced might be valuable to some of the committee members for reading and review over the weekend when we come back to this.
I don't have advice. That is exactly what I was looking for.
Mr. Chair, it's online at the FCC site.
Somebody could get that to Brian, or you think, if it's online, Brian can send out the link to the committee members. Why don't we do that? Brian can send that out. And if you want any other entertainment from reading for the weekend, just let us know. We can probably find you some more. But
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention that since we are going to be hearing more about this issue, I'm going to be starting a pool. Everybody can throw in a buck to estimate how many times in the next hearing we're going to hear the phrase level playing field.
Mr. Chair?
This is not the gaming division, Representative Hilty.
We'll be done Friday, though.
Is that a paper or electronic?
We'll do that the old-fashioned way.
Members, we have a technical change we need to make on one of the set of minutes that was approved. The chair will move to make the technical change amendment as follows.
Mr. Chair, the caption is January 30th, and I appear to have been having an out-of-body experience and working on January the 1st, so I will make the correction. Thank you, Representative Erickson and Representative Westerberg.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I oppose, same sign. Motion carries. There is an author's amendment to this HF 1319 bill. Brian has copies of it. There will be copies in the packets next week. If you want it earlier, Brian can get you a copy of it. And we will adjourn until next Wednesday. Gaming division next Tuesday on the 14th. And this Friday also. Friday the 10th, the gaming division will meet. And the 14th, 15th will be the next regulated industries committee. Meeting is adjourned.